Their whole lives are ahead of them, and so this is a senseless collision. This is a collision that
his flashlight. And Washington State Trooper Brian Moore joins us today. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Welcome to KPQ with the bad news of closing a highway. I mean, that's always good news, isn't it, Trooper?
We try not to do that very often.
Of course, you don't do it, right? Jeff, your department gets to close freeways.
Well, yesterday it was his department that got to close Blewett Pass for about 6 hours.
Because were you guys up there for that?
Truck in the road.
Yeah, the Washington State Patrol was up there. We had a one semi rollover non-injury or minor injury collision that did close Blewett Pass for about 5.5 hours. Fortunately, nobody was seriously injured. We had enclosed trailer with about 80,000 pounds of apples. And so, any time that a pass gets closed, it's a significant impact to the motoring public.
How did that load get away from its truck? Was it speed or changing lanes or what was going on?
Well, it's still under investigation. Our initial investigation, though, is showing that the driver drifted onto the shoulder, overcorrected, and ended up rolling. He could not have picked a better spot to block that highway.
So it was perfect.
It was a perfect landing, roadway edge to roadway edge, and there was zero possibility to get around it.
Wow. So 5.5 hours later.
Yeah, emergency crews were up there. Multiple tow trucks were up there, and it was a significant event that took a lot of time to get cleared out. And we understand those traffic impacts. Ultimately, the safety of the motoring public and the safety of the personnel on scene are going to dictate how long we keep that closure. And we were able to get the traffic cleared out as soon as possible, but it did take some time to actually get that fully cleaned up.
Nobody hurt?
Nobody was hurt.
That's not easy to do, to roll your truck and come out of it unhurt.
We're extremely fortunate on that one.
Now, typical of me, Jeff, I always trivialize these matters. What happened to the apples?
As with any of the cargo involved in accidents such as this, it's the owner of the vehicle, the owner of the project or product that is responsible for it.
So this guy had to call his boss and said, "You'll never guess." Also, I need some help because I'm responsible for cleaning this up.
That's correct. Depending upon the circumstances, there are times that in order to reopen the lanes, you might see one of our 5-ton loaders pushing apples off onto the shoulder and let them deal with it after that.
Is Blewett especially vulnerable for this type of accident, just the way it's designed or maybe the way it's graded? Anyone?
Well, I think what we have is the distractions within vehicles right now are becoming a major issue. Thousands and thousands of people cross our mountain passes safely every single day. And it's when we get into those hurries and when we're no longer focusing safely on our driving that we get into these predicaments. So I've been here now 15 years, and I've crossed over that mountain pass hundreds of times.
Never lost your load of apples.
Never lost my load of apples. So what it really boils down to is that it's the driver's responsibility to drive in such a manner to avoid these collisions. And so this is exactly what happened yesterday, and it's exactly what is most of the time the case up there.
For the most part, these guys you think would have driven that pass many times, but it's not always the case. Sometimes you get a rookie who doesn't know what he's up against or what he's about to encounter, and it's too late with that much weight behind you to try to correct.
It is. We're fortunate in this community. We are an agricultural and a tourist-based community. That is what Wenatchee is. Our apples are known worldwide, and so we get a lot of truck traffic that comes into the Wenatchee Valley from all over the country. And some of these drivers may not necessarily have been here before or whatnot, but it really is. Bottom line, it boils down to driver responsibility to be able to safely make it over those passes.
Seems a terrible thing to waste those apples. I hope a herd of something comes by and eats them and enjoys them and can't believe their good fortune. Have you ever seen that happen, Jeff?
It's not absolutely unheard of to see deer enjoying the results of a crash.
Now, something's coming up in September. September 9th, in fact, is when it starts. You've come up with a great idea. I'm not blaming it on you. But someone's decided that the culverts need replacing on Blewett Pass, so we're going to have to close it again, this time for how many days?
By the hour, is 4.5 days, but it's from the 9th to the 14th. That's Sunday night to Friday morning.
Now, locals know the Blewett Pass closes for a variety of reasons periodically without much notice, so there are ways to get around this. But let's talk about those alternative routes for people who are rookies.
They're all long. We don't have a recommended detour because of the fact that it really depends upon where you're coming from and where you're trying to get to.
Everything on the planet so depends on those two things.
Anybody on the west side who typically would use Highway 2 and then go over Blewett Pass to, say, get to Yakima, is going to have to adjust their trip and come over I-90 and go south. And people coming from the east who would be typically turning on Blewett Pass to get to Highway 2 and maybe to Leavenworth or Lake Chelan are going to have to pull off at George and take 281 down to Quincy and 28 into Wenatchee to get to Highway 2.
Wow. So it is long no matter what you do.
Yes.
How do you actually close a stretch of road like that? Where do you actually say, all right, that's it, you're the last car, no more?
Well, we have the time set at 9 o'clock Sunday night. You will not be able to drive over Blewett Pass, period.
Now, you know how many people are going to hear this and make plans. You also know that the number of people that don't hear it or forgot about it are going to be numerous. How many people do you actually turn around when you do that?
I can tell you that historically, if you are putting out, you know, your full court press when it comes to trying to reach the public and tell them about it in advance, 80% is the best you will ever do. You will still have 20% of the people who had planned on taking Blewett Pass passing every sign, every electronic message, every radio, highway advisory radio message, and paying absolutely no attention to any of the media outreach or Twitter or Facebook or blogs or will show up at the barricade angry. What is this?
You can't close a road.
And why didn't I know?
Now, your two departments, WSDOT and the troopers, share jurisdiction on the freeway, but I don't know how you guys share that. But who's got the who wields the truncheon when it comes to freeway rules?
It's actually shared. So the Washington State Patrol and Washington State Department of Transportation both have the authority to close a highway in an emergency situation if needed. That's the last thing that the State Patrol wants to do unless we have to do it. The Washington State Patrol, we understand that this is going to be a major traffic impact for that motoring public. We're working with Washington State Department of Transportation to minimize those impacts. Right now, we're going to be focusing on the safety of the motoring public, Washington State Department of Transportation employees, and those crews that are working within that area. We're also going to be focusing in on the detour routes, which are, US 2, I-90, SR 28, and 281 out towards Quincy. We're going to be focusing to minimize those impacts, watching for aggressive drivers and those collision-causing violations. So we understand that this is going to be a major impact. The Washington State Patrol is preparing for that, and we're here to partner with Washington State Department of Transportation to make it as seamless as possible.
I don't want you to rack your brain for statistics, but when you close a road like this, does it put enough other traffic on the alternative routes to cause problems?
It will. We're anticipating some significant traffic impacts in those detouring areas, and we're going to focus our resources on that to ensure that we minimize those impacts.
And Jeff.
Trying to minimize those impacts, part of that is the timing for this. It's after Labor Day, which typically brings a significant reduction in the travel from vacationers. And then we're trying to get it wrapped up by Friday the 14th, because that puts us then before any of the classes begin at Central.
But, so you let the Cougs through, but not the Eagles, right?
And just tell you, you know, the average daily traffic count over Blewett Pass actually exceeds the number of vehicles over Stevens Pass.
What's the estimated number?
6,100 is the average daily traffic count from 2016, which was the last full year of data that's been processed. And Stevens stayed real steady at about 5,500.
And the other 2,000 cars we just never heard from again. For some reason. I'm sure they're all healthy and fine and at home. Put their feet up on the coffee table.
You know, by way of comparison, average daily traffic count over Snoqualmie is 25,000.
Wow.
So
now you might ask yourself, why would you do such a thing? Why would you close Blewett Pass? And we have the answer to that. In fact, it's a good answer right after this.
KPQ.com.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Our very special guests today are Jeff Adamson, the communications manager from the Washington State Department of Transportation, and Washington State Trooper Brian Moore are with us today. Titles are good. Names are fine, but titles are especially fine after you've worked so hard to earn them. Now, let's talk about we're closing Blewett Pass. It's got to be a good reason, and you have six good reasons, don't you?
Oh, how many would you like?
Well, I'm only counting the culverts. You may have some other secret ideas that I don't know about up there.
No, the culverts are key, and there are actually two things that are driving this. One is the fact that we have some culverts up there that because of changes that have taken place in the topography as a result of winter flooding,
erosion.
Yeah, it has changed the volume of water during high water events and where it goes. And there's a couple of culverts on this side, the north side of the pass, that are from creeks that feed into Tromson Creek, that they're just not adequate any longer. And in 2011... we had the pass closed for weeks because of, you know, the fact that that year we got blasted and it took out lanes. Wonderful pictures on the website. If you
doesn't take long when water starts to do its work, does it? The roadway underneath is gone, and then the road itself is gone, and then that's it.
And you don't have a whole lot of choice other than just to try to fix it. And frankly, the way emergency money is handled by the federal government, we couldn't replace those culverts at that time when we were trying to put the road back together with anything different than what was there to start with. You can't make any improvements.
Because you didn't have time
for
that.
With federal emergency money, I don't know, you know.
So now you're going back to help to do it correctly, put in a larger culvert to handle more water?
Yes, and frankly, that... you know, there are two on the north side that, yes, we're taking out small, inadequate culverts, round ones that, you know, you're familiar with, and replacing them with concrete box culverts that will handle anything that's coming out of those hillsides.
The problem is, I guess, one, the construction, the design of the culvert, one, was inadequate, and two, because it was under the road, it took out the road.
Well, the box culvert's going to be under the road, too. But, again, their structure is such that they can handle six, seven times the volume that the culverts they're replacing can handle.
How many guys are you going to have working up there? A small city?
I was going to say, the Department of Transportation is probably going to have two people up there who are project inspectors, but Hearst Construction... and Pipkin are in charge of determining the number of people they need to do each piece that needs to get done.
Do you tear up the road completely and then repave it?
Yeah, the road has to come off in order to be able to remove the current culvert, and then obviously to install one that's much larger and a completely different design.
When you look at it that way, is that enough time? I mean, that's a lot of work to be done in 5 days.
We've been planning this for 2 years.
Really?
And the period of time that we started out with initially It was going to be a full two-week or two-week-plus closure. And got to hand it to both of the contractors for, you know, reaching into their hat full of magic and saying, there's a different way we can do this or a different piece of equipment that we can bring in. And they have been just instrumental in being able to whittle that down.
Well, I've learned two things about Blewett Pass in my years sitting in this seat, and that is it's known for two things that I didn't know about. One, gold. All the prospectors go to Blewett Pass because that's where the gold is, and apparently there's a lot of it still up there. And two, Bigfoot. Bigfoot comes right down to the road and scares people there at Blewett Pass all the time. I know the deputies that have to deal with these calls think I'm crazy, but I've had many an individual come on the show and say, that's the spot. That's where you hear. If you want to encounter Bigfoot, act like a fool around Blewett Pass, and you will be contacted. So warn your crews on that one. And this type of box culvert, is that going to be in design and in use all over the state now that you know how to?
Oh, yeah. The box culverts are one of the tools that's in your toolbox, and in this particular case, that's the appropriate treatment for these locations. And, on the north side, or on the south side of the pass by Swak Creek, the culvert that's coming out there is very large, but the orientation and the angle is such that the bull trout, steelhead, and salmon Can't get up it. And that one's being fixed basically as a result of Fish and Wildlife and environmental concerns, as opposed to the handling water during a runoff like the other ones are on the north side.
I think that the most erosion would be on the intake side where the water is approaching the road, but then just as much water comes out the other side and could erode the road on the exit side. Is that possible?
Yeah, and it really depends, because frankly, most of these culverts, when they do fail, they have become completely plugged with rocks, tree, debris, and at that point, then you've got all of the water on one side, and it's going to take out everything under the lane, and as it did in 2011. The pictures are amazing. You're looking at it and saying that's a good 20, 30 feet of nothing under that layer of asphalt that hasn't collapsed yet.
And is it downpours that do this, or is it snow melt or a combination?
Typically, it's not snow melt.
That's too gradual.
It's a storm that causes those volumes of water to hit all at once.
Where are you going to work your crews? Are they going to sleep someplace on our side, or they're private guys.
That's private contractor. They will arrange their people and bring them in and take them out, and that's their responsibility. It's part of what they've addressed in saying in their bid, we'll do this. We'll do this during this period of time. And this is our bid.
So Trooper Moore, when they sat down to tell you about their idea of closing the pass, your reaction was, what do we have to do here?
Well, we knew with the State Patrol that we were going to be involved regardless. The partnership that we have with Washington State Department of Transportation, we knew that we were going to have to assist with it. And so for us, the biggest thing right now is just messaging. We want to get it out there to the public that this is going to be a closure. They need to be aware of this closure and mentally start preparing for the closure now. And we've worked with the Seattle media on the same thing. Washington State Department of Transportation's put out their official press release. And that's why we're here today, is just to let the local community know that this is something that they need to be prepared for. And at 9 o'clock on September 9th, that pass is going to be closed.
Until sometime on, I guess you'll reopen it on Friday.
Friday morning at 9 a.m.
Come hell or high water. Forgive the phrase. There'll be some hell involved. I hope not high water. We'll be right back with our special guest right after this.
At KPQ.com.
Our special guest this afternoon on the agenda is Washington State Trooper Brian Moore and also the communications manager from the Washington State Department of Transportation, Jeff Adamson. We're talking about the closing of Blewett Pass and all that that entails. And we were just remind you once again, don't be the one that doesn't figure out Sundays then at 9 o'clock on September 9th that the road is closed by driving up there and finding out that it's closed. That's not the way to proceed. So remember and tell all your friends, Sunday, September 9th, 9 p.m., Blewett Pass will be closed for 5 days. And that's no joke. No getting around. No hall passes. You cannot pass.
No, there are people who have asked,
can you write me a note?
Can't we use old Blewett or can't we use this Forest Service road? And I'll let you know that all of the roads that could conceivably be used that way are blocked and you cannot use them.
And that's the answer to that. No, you may not pass. We had a wreck up there where we lost apples and a load, but the Blewett Pass is not the only place. We've had some wrecks that we've been talking about recently. We had a fatality that you had to cover, Deputy the Trooper, and I just wondered if you could relate how easily that could have been avoided.
Yeah, it was a pretty tragic collision that we had Monday afternoon down on 970 a couple miles east of Cleellum. We had an impaired driver. He was impaired by prescription medication. He ended up rolling his car. He had four teenagers within that vehicle that were all unrestrained. Tragically, they were ejected from the vehicle. One of those teenagers, who happened to be his son, died at the scene. And so we also have two that are still in critical condition at Harborview Medical Center, pretty extreme critical condition. So it's tragic. Any time that the State Patrol deals with a fatality collision, it's difficult for those units on scene. It's especially difficult when we show up and they're young kids. Their whole lives are ahead of them. And so this is a senseless collision. This is a collision that absolutely could have been avoided. Any collision that involves impairment is senseless. This particular case, it was prescription medication. And the law doesn't differentiate between alcohol, marijuana, or illegal drug or a prescription drug. If you're impaired by that medication, it's a DUI. And so ultimately this driver was arrested for vehicular homicide and the death of his son and three counts of vehicular assault for the other three kids that were in the vehicle. The Washington State Patrol our hearts go out to the families that's involved, those first responders that were on scene. This was a difficult collision to investigate. And so we just want to make sure that people are aware that if you're impaired, the Washington State Patrol, we have a no tolerance policy on that. And so you're going to be arrested.
May I ask how you determined he was impaired? Sometimes prescription drugs can be hard to analyze. Was he obviously impaired? Or maybe were you on the scene? Or do you want to talk about that?
So we have, I can talk about that. We have specially trained officers, troopers, deputies throughout the state that are what we call drug recognition experts. And it's a fancy name for those that have received some really specialized training in determining different categories of drugs. So not just alcohol, but, a variety of different categories of drugs. We have a trooper that was utilized and went in, did an evaluation on this driver, came to the conclusion between the evaluation and the interview that he was impaired. He was arrested. Subsequently, a search warrant was applied for, and we obtained the driver's blood. That blood's being sent off to the state toxicologist lab and sent for further analysis. So once we get those results back, that will also be forwarded over to the prosecutor's office. But at the time, we had enough probable cause to believe that he was impaired and was arrested. So it's just a senseless collision. It has tragic consequences, and it really hits home for all of those involved, including the first responders down there.
I remember when my daughter first started speaking, and one of the first things she would do was she'd make the parents put on their seatbelts. And it was fascinating. She was checking me, and her whole generation now, of course, puts them on without thinking. People sit in the car. I have to sometimes think about it. My point being, it's so rare for the driver of this car to be wearing a seatbelt, but for all of his passengers not to be wearing their seatbelts just seems to be unbelievable.
And seatbelt saves lives. This driver was restrained at the time and suffered relatively minor injuries. He was injured, but minor injuries in comparison to the four children that were not. We stress and stress that seatbelts save lives, click it or ticket. And that's why sometimes we're asked, why are you
why is the State Patrol so hard on those that aren't wearing their seatbelts? This is why, because they truly save lives. And so, you know, we really want to stress that you need to be putting your seatbelts on. The schools educate that, but, you know, this parent was impaired at the time, which obviously would have affected his judgment. But, you know, my three kids know we're not going anywhere until that seatbelt's on.
Also, most people on the planet can't imagine what you see on a regular basis when it comes to the errors that we make on the road and the price we pay for them.
Everybody makes mistakes. I make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes as drivers. And so what we need to do is we need to minimize those distractions within our vehicles. We need to minimize the impairment that's involved. If you're, you know, there's nothing wrong with having that beer at a party, but if we're going to be impaired, make sure that we arrange for that sober driver. If you're going to have a couple beers, don't drive. Don't take that risk. You may think you're okay. And most of the people that we contact at night or even during the day that are impaired, they think they're fine. And in reality, they're impaired and they're not safe to operate a motor vehicle. So, you know, we have a job to do and we're going to do that job. We're going to be professional when we do that job. Yeah, it takes a toll for what first responders see out there.
So let's go back to the reason for our original gathering here today. If you can, in 60 seconds, Jeffrey Adamson, summarize what's going to happen at Blewett Pass on Sunday the 9th.
On Sunday the 9th, the barricades will go up at the Big Y on this side and at Lauderdale Junction on the other side, which is where Highway 97 and Highway 970 meet the other side of Mineral Springs. And the reason that the closure points are that far away from where the actual work's being done is because of the fact that those are the places where you have the opportunity to take another route, as opposed to driving, you know, 10, 12 miles up to a barricade and having to turn around and drive back.
And how long do you think the work's going to take to put in six new culverts?
There are going to be three new culverts replacing the three we're taking out. And that work is going to start Sunday night, and it is going to continue until Friday morning, and there are going to be no breaks through that period. And easily, they're getting 2 weeks' worth of work done in 5 days.
Tell your guys, no brakes, no leaning on the shovel while they're up there. I've seen that before. We're not going to have any of that. I'm sure they'll do a great job. Washington State Department of Transportation Communications Manager Jeff Adamson and Washington State Trooper Brian Moore. Thanks, guys, for being here.
Thank you.
It's good to see
it.
You both again.
It is.
Have a safe drive home.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ.